G'day, wherever you may be around the world, and thank you for tuning into Truth to You once again with Jono and Jason. G'day, mate.
G'day, g'day. Hi, everybody.
G'day, g'day. I want to say right off the bat, g'day to Brian Cable. I can't remember which program it was, but do you recall that we were talking about face masks, and particularly on aeroplanes? And I said to you that next time I take an aeroplane over to, I'm absolutely going the face mask. So Brian wrote in, and he said to me, in response to your face masks and breathing recycled air. Someone else also wrote in and said that, yeah, it's absolutely recycled air. It was you who told me that. Mm-hmm. He said, my parents visited from the other side of the country. Dad got influenza B on the plane, and mum got laryngitis and sinus and bronchitis, all this stuff. And then my boy got the flu 2 days later after they arrived. He went to Walgreens and found masks by Curad that have 2% citric acid in outside of the mask and zinc and copper nanoparticles on the inside of the mask. Anyway, he said, I didn't get sick. So good on you. He reckons that they were Curad.com. He gave me the link for the antiviral face mask. I'm going to buy a box of those. Sounds like a good thing.
Strap those on when you next time you're on your long haul to Israel.
I totally will. I don't even care how I look. I'm totally going to do that.
Or it's on the bus wearing the blanket or anywhere else.
Yeah, everywhere.
Yeah.
Everyone should wear masks. Another shout out to someone who left a comment on your Facebook, on your YouTube channel, Spiritual Babies YouTube channel, which you do upload these programs to. From EVW, I'm going to call him Eddie Van Whalen. How's that?
EVW. Yeah, that's good, yeah.
He said, how did you not mention that JoJo, you remember, I think it was last week we talked about JoJo the Watchman. Last year, we were talking about this Green Moon meme that was going around Facebook. Last year, on I think the 19th of April, 2017, he'd seen this Green Moon meme on Facebook. It was just a joke, but he took it seriously. And in this little video that he put up on his page, he said that he asked the Lord Jesus about it. And I failed to mention, and it was absolutely, and you're right, Eddie Van Whalen, absolutely neglect on my part, and I do apologize. JoJo asked Jesus about it, and a few seconds later, Jesus replied, and JoJo had visions of werewolves. He said all he could see were werewolves. And you're right, Eddie Van Whalen, we should have absolutely gone to town on that. And for some reason, for whatever it was, it just absolutely eluded me at the time. I'd forgotten about it. But there it was for you, like a little, you know, treat when you actually looked him up.
When you take the two things as independent, like entries, independent events, that's kind of coincidence. It's weird that we would talk about that and he saw it. Maybe there's something in that. Maybe we could should.
Well, I mean, considering the two programs before that, we were talking about werewolves. And we were talking about that because of the blue moon. Yeah. But JoJo the Watchman saw werewolves after he asked Jesus about the green moon. Which was a hoax. But we were just mentioning last week how that meme has floated again around Facebook for this year, saying that on April the 20th, all the planets will align, causing the moon to turn green for 90 minutes. And, you know, JoJo was saying that'll be when Jesus unleashes werewolves upon us and then he'll come again, so you better repent. Now, speaking of Jesus coming again and the apocalypse and all that sort of stuff, you had something going on. And you flicked an article my way, and also Matthew 24. Do you want which order do you want me to do this? Do you want to read Matthew 24 or
can you do Matthew 24 first in the voice? Don't have to do the whole thing. Just down to maybe, I don't know, 28 or something, and then I'll talk about the news article.
All right, okay. So you just want me to start at the beginning of the chapter?
Yeah, I think it's better if you start at the beginning of the chapter.
All right, will you tell me when to stop? Because it's kind of long. Okay. Here we go. Jesus left the temple and was going away when his disciples came to point out to him the buildings of the temple. But he answered them, "You see all of these, do you not? Truly I say to you, there will not be left here one stone upon another that will not be thrown down." Didn't exactly happen, but anyway, verse 3. As he sat on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately, saying, "Tell us, when will these things be, and what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age?" And Jesus answered them, "See that no one leads you astray." I love this verse. This is one of my favorite verses in the New Testament, verse 5. "For many will come in my name, saying that I am the Messiah, and they'll lead you astray." That should be on the front of every single New Testament. Many will come saying that I'm the Messiah and will lead you astray. Yeah. And you will hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not alarmed, for this must take place, but the end is not yet. For nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines and earthquakes in various places. And all of these are just but the beginning of the birth pangs. Then they will deliver you up to tribulation and put you to death. Oh, and you will be hated. Well, that's kind of weird. That's a weird. Hmm. That's a strange order. They'll deliver you up to tribulation and they'll put you to death and you'll be hated. Who cares if they hate you after you're dead? Anyway, by all nations for my name's sake. And then many will fall away and betray one another and hate one another. And many false prophets will arise and lead many astray. And because lawlessness will increase, the love of many will grow cold, but the one who endures to the end will be saved, and this gospel of the kingdom will be proclaimed throughout the whole world as a testimony to the nations, and then the end will come.
That's enough. Yeah, right, that was good. Well, I love the beginning of that when Jesus is clearly walking away from an area. He meets his mates, and his mates turn him around and say, "Oh, did you see that area?" Jesus was leaving the temple, and he bumped into his buddies, and his buddies said, "Did you see the temple?" Jesus was like, "Whoa!" No, I totally missed it. So there's an article in the Express, I believe, only a couple of days ago now. World War III is coming. So last week we talked about the mystery planet that David Mead said is coming and it's going to wipe out Earth or begin a crisis is going to come on the planet. This week, World War III is coming. Battle to spark reign of Jesus. Hinted at in this Bible passage.
Right.
And the Bible passage was Matthew 24:6-7, where wars and rumors of wars, nations will rise against nations and there'll be famines and earthquakes and whatnot. Apparently, according to David Mead, and to be fair, many others, this is going to spark World War III between North Korea and America.
Mm.
Now, I'm not saying that that's not going to happen, but I'm just saying it's probably nothing to do with this Bible verse. Mm. And that this is going to bring about the beginning of the tribulation, which is an excellent term. And one of the things I think that will probably, if the love part of Christianity doesn't convert you to Christianity, then almost assuredly, the not dying in a pit of eternal fire in the tribulation will. So wanting to be part of that rapture crowd, that's a big sell. Mm. And that's quite a powerful message. So allegedly, this world war is going to happen this year.
They haven't actually put someone hasn't put a date on it. I mean, someone stupidly puts a date on these things, some evangelical preacher, and so far they've had a 100% fail rate. Have they actually put a date on it?
Not yet. David Mead said that the world was going to end so far on September 23rd and November 19th last year, and this year he says that the planet's going to appear in March. Stay tuned. I'm sure if you don't like that date, you can wait around and there'll be another one. Mm-hmm. But the world war will start this year, and that the planet will somehow coincide with that, and that this will bring around the 3.5 years of war, and the Antichrist will appear. When I went back to have a look through Matthew, I thought, there's been wars and rumors of wars since this passage was written.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been earthquakes since this pattern has been written, and famines since this pattern was written. And it struck me that it's really actually super random or super kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? I mean, it could mean lots of things, right? It's really open-ended.
It's subjective. It's entirely subjective. And surely, people back in the day of World War One should have gone, they would have been going, Christians would have gone, this is it.
And they were, weren't they? I mean, there was this text going back to the 1800s. Actually, if you want to look for text on tribulation and rapture, you probably won't find any books written on that before the 1800s. It's not something that people thought about in a world setting.
No, that is true. In fact, I'm just trying to remember, it began in Europe, it began in England, or was it Scotland? I'm trying to remember the guy's name, John. I'd have to look it up. But it was the 1800s, if I do recall correctly, that the whole rapture theory evolved.
And, you know, people get a hold of it, and then suddenly they think that's been there forever, and it just hasn't.
Mm. Now, you got me thinking about it. It actually started with a dream of a young girl, and it was taken – the dream was taken hold of as a really cool story by a particular preacher who really developed it and went to town with it, and that was his gig from then on, and he was preaching this rapture theory. Mm. And it took off, and I do think it was the 1800s. You keep talking, I'll see if I can find it.
All right. Something else that struck me about that particular passage in Matthew from 3-14 is the way he says that many will come saying they're me and will lead others astray. And I think that will lead many astray. And I know that occasionally some guy turns up and says he's Jesus with, you know, varying levels of effect.
Mm.
But I don't think I can remember one name of one person who came saying they were Jesus and they led many astray. Many enough that it would warrant being connected to this passage. I can't remember a single person who brought even 5,000 people to believe that they were the actual embodiment of Jesus and lead them away from the church.
I can think of one. I can think of one. I can think of David Koresh.
Oh, well, yeah. Yeah, that's true. But would you say would that warrant being mentioned? Because I think this guy's probably talking about someone that sways countries.
Yeah, we're talking, well, it talks about nations. Now, by the way, it was Margaret MacDonald, born in 1815, Port Glasgow, Scotland. It was Scotland. Died in around 1840. She lived with her two older brothers, James and George, both whom ran a shipping business, blah, 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 blah. Beginning in 1826 and through to 1829, a few preachers in Scotland emphasized that the world's problems could be addressed through an outbreak of supernatural gifts from the Holy Spirit. In response, Isabella and Mary Campbell of the parish of Roseneath. Where's Roseneath? No idea. Manifested charismatic experiences such as speaking in tongues. Around 1830, miraculous healings were reported through James Campbell, first of his sister Margaret MacDonald, and then of Mary Campbell through James. Through James's letter to Mary. Shortly thereafter, James and George MacDonald manifested the speaking and interpretation of tongues, and soon others followed suit in prayer meetings. These charismatic experiences garnered major national attention. Many came to see and investigate these, some such as Edward Irving, Henry Drummond, regarded these as events and as genuine displays from the Holy Spirit. Others, including, and this is the name I was looking for, John Nelson Darby. This is the alleged origin of predispensational pre-tribulation rapture. Oh, wow. I'm just reading from the wiki. There have been a couple of attempts to locate the source for Darby's concept of the rapture. The belief that a core of Christian believers who have died and will be raised from the dead, and believers who are still alive and remain, shall be caught up together in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air. That's 1 Thessalonians 4:17, in conjunction with the second coming of Christ. But it goes on to say that the source of Darby's rapture was from a Margaret MacDonald 1930 vision of the end times. Okay, so that is it. But it's a wild read, people. I mean, if you want to read some really crazy stuff, I mean, we saw, particularly in the sort of 60s, the 70s, certainly the 80s, charismatic Pentecostal Christianity. And I was wrapped up in that as a kid. I was brought up in that sort of nonsense. But if you want to trace it back, that whole ridiculous carry-on, if you want to trace it back to its origin, you end up with Margaret MacDonald and John Nelson Darby. Anyway.
Isn't that nuts? It's kind of interesting that was happening kind of in the beginning of technology, and they had steam trains were just starting then, and aeroplanes was kind of getting off the ground. And it's odd. So I'd encourage people to go and have a look at Matthew 24. And you know, if you're worried, if you're listening to this and you are a Christian and you manage somehow to not get super annoyed at us kind of poking fun, then just have a look at Matthew 24 and tick off all the boxes which you could say justifiably have happened now and that happened 50 years ago or 100 years ago and 150 years ago. And many false prophets will arise and lead many astray. Don't really remember that happening. And this is interesting, though. And because lawlessness will be increased, and the love of many will grow cold. So I look at that And the only place I know within a religious community which is based on the Hebrew Bible where lawlessness will be increased, I would say, would be in certain areas of the church. Lawlessness there is talking about the lack of Torah law being implemented within the faith group.
You would think so, yeah.
And the love of many will grow cold, meaning they're not getting involved in their neighborhoods and their communities and other people because they believe that they've got the only answer. So, I don't know. I think that I doubt, you know, I really don't doubt that something terrible could happen between North Korea and anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
But I do doubt that that's any part of Jesus's return.
Well, you know, as is often said, and I said earlier in this program, you know, it's been 2,000 years and eschatological speculation in this regard has had 100% failure rate. So, I'm willing to put my chips on it's not going to happen.
I can see why they believe that. I mean, they read in the text when God says forever, they think that doesn't mean forever. So why would they think soon means soon?
Crazy stuff. What can you do? What else have we got? Now, what did you want to talk about? What else? You drive this bus.
I was interested. So you've done some shows before. One particular good. All right, we'll go back in time now to maybe, 5 or 6 years ago now, when I was listening to a series on Truth to You, way before we were talking, and you were, and Nehemia Gordon and Keith were doing a series called Torah Pals, and it was a huge, huge success.
It was. It was a really, really popular series, so much so that we did a second series with Rabbi Tavia Singer and yourself. And again, you know, very, very popular. People love the Torah Pearls program. Who knows, you know, in the next year or so, we may do another series as well.
There should be a series 3. So I'd listened to that all of the time. I'd listen to it on the weekends and at night times when I was settling into bed, I'd have it going. And it was full of information. And I can say that they played a huge part in my questioning the what then was the Old Testament in relation to its relationship with the New Testament.
Yes.
And played a huge part in leading me out. And which was kind of odd because I thought, well, you know, what? Surely that's not the point of this program. And I don't know if that is the point of the I think the point of the program really is to express the Tanakh in a way which is not biased on any other information and just goes straight back to the text and tries to talk about what the text is. And one of the voices... Yeah, go ahead.
Well, no, I was just saying it's interesting you should bring it up because through my association with Nehemia... Okay, so Nehemia Gordon, a Karaite, a Jewish chap, extremely intelligent... has a degree in I think archaeology and has a master's in philology. He's a philologist and worked on the translation of the Dead Sea Scrolls. Hebrew University in Jerusalem has written a number of books and is a very good public speaker and is out and about doing a number of gigs in the States, I do believe. If you get a chance to go and listen to him, you should do so. It's interesting that you should be talking about this. I don't know if you received. I received in this last week. Some people sent me a video of something that he did recently. Absolutely flabbergasted, going, "What is this? What is he talking about? What is this?" And what it was it was quite clever. So it's Nehemia talking to Dr. Mark. I've actually spoken to Dr. Mark on the program before, and we were talking.
I remember.
Do you? Okay. Yeah, we were talking about the benefits of probiotic food. And it was really cool. And he's a nice guy, but he's a Christian. He's a, if you like, I guess he might refer to himself as a Torah observant Christian. Now, he and Nehemia were talking about how Nehemia actually strengthened his faith in the New Testament. And it's really interesting. And they were, a lot of people have contacted me freaking out going, what does this mean? Is this where you're going, by the way?
I was just going to say that we, you know, we spend a lot of time making a lot of programs, which some people call anti-missionary or counter-missionary, and I think really are just kind of our response to certain claims. And we try and sometimes do it in a kind of, not a stealthy way, but in a non-aggressive way, where we give people information and hopefully let them make their minds up for themselves.
Yeah.
And I thought we were being quite good at being stealthy. And then I saw the...
No.
And I thought, wow, no, we're doing it completely wrong.
Yeah, no. Nehemiah is great. Like, well, no, like, no, we're not doing it wrong. We're just doing it different. So Nehemiah is very calculating. He's a very intelligent guy. And he's great at dropping hints. He really, really is. And look, you know, I owe him a lot. I owe him an enormous amount. We don't record together anymore because he's chosen to go in a direction that I can't. I can't work with people like, you know, I don't want to be associated with people like Michael Rood and all that sort of stuff. He has the ability to do that. Hence the reason why we did a season two that had Tobias Singer. But the reason why we did a season two with Tobias was actually because of Nehemiah in a way. And again, I'm very, very grateful to him. And I remember a program, we did a program and it was certainly before Torah Pearls. And we did many, many programs before Torah Pearls. And in one of them, at some stage, you know, way before this particular program, I had wanted to know, you know, why don't Jews accept the Christian Messiah? And at the time, I was still a Christian. I was, in fact, a Christian street preacher, right? I would stop people and talk to them on the street, and I did this through a method called Way of the Master, which was New Zealand chap Todd Friel was the Way of the Master radio. And Ray Comfort that's and Kirk Cameron, right? The actor, Kirk Cameron, if you can call him an actor. Anyway, so, no, he's absolutely an actor. Anyway, so they have this great, look, it's very entertaining and for Christians. And the thing that I loved about Way of the Master is that it at least had a place to of respect for the Torah, more so than your average Christian expression, and that was really something that I was looking for. But what kind of ticked me off as I was learning more in the Tanakh was that Way of the Master would use the Ten Commandments against people, you know, to say, you know, have you done this? Have you done that? Mm. Well, then you haven't done it, therefore you've sinned, therefore, you know, accept Jesus. So that, you know, but the funny thing about it, when it came to the fourth commandment, which is, of course, you know, I remember my Sabbath, keep my Sabbath, the seventh day, what they would say is, well, you haven't done that, now accept Jesus so that you don't have to. And I challenged Ray on this, and there was a little bit of back and forth, if I remember, and I wasn't satisfied. He wasn't going to budge, and I was a bit ticked off, and I got online and somehow ended up on Way of the Master Radio, Todd Friel trying to convert with a very, how do I say, he was just very cocky about it, trying to convert a rabbi using this method of that Way of the Master promotes. And I'm listening, and the rabbi was Rabbi Tobias Singer, and Tobias had excellent responses and answers to everything that Todd had thrown to him. And so much so that I felt quite threatened in my Christian faith. And I thought, you know, there's so much that I don't know about the Tanakh. This is years ago. Like, this must have been maybe 2009 or something. And lo and behold, it seems like Jewish apologetics really has some substance. Well, I put that on the back burner because that was a bit too much for me at the time. But I remember listening to, and of course, you know, Nehemiah, his thing really is the name of God, the Tetragrammaton. And he said, I think Dr. Michael Brown does an excellent job of, you know, explaining the Christian position. And he said, and I think Rabbi Tobias Singer does an excellent job of explaining the Jewish position. And when I listened to him, I thought, oh, I know that name, Rabbi Tobias Singer. Where do I know that from? And I remembered, oh, it was that thing. And then I thought, man, so Nehemiah's mentioned Tobia. I better go and listen to, you know, investigate Tobia a little bit more. So I found my way as a result of again, you know, Nehemiah dropping little hints, little bits of information here, because it's counter-missionary work is not his gig, right? Yeah. And he's very careful and he's very clever. And like you said, he's very stealth. And so I took and I had asked him, you know, before, you know, can you help me out here? He's, it's not really my thing, you know, blah, blah, blah. He mentions Rabbi Tovia Singer. I go to Rabbi Tovia Singer and I find Outreach Judaism. I spent the next few weeks listening to every single MP3 that was available to listen to for free, reading articles that was available to read for free on his website. And honestly, it was just a couple of weeks where I just thought, I am shelving my New Testament for good. That is it. Clearly, and so very clearly, the New Testament is not true, and it's actually counter what is being said in the Torah and in the Tanakh as a whole. And I refined my faith to the Tanakh, and as you know, and you and I and Tovia work together now for years as a result. But I have Nehemiah to thank for that.
Which makes it all the more surprising when his latest video opens with Dr. Mark expressing.
Well, I wasn't so surprised, no, because you see, in order for Nehemiah to be able to do what he did for me, he needs to be able to stay in that environment because you know, otherwise, I mean, look, if he wasn't in that environment, dropping, you know, those crumbs, if you like. Then people like myself wouldn't be compelled to go and look things up elsewhere with those little leads, those little hints that he supplies. And perhaps I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't be of the mindset of that which I hold to today, the faith expression that I hold to today. And honestly, I'm very, very grateful to him for that. And again, I don't have the temperament or the ability to travel in those circles. I just can't do it. And therefore we parted ways. He's gone on his journey and I've gone on mine. He works within those circles. And I don't doubt that many people that are in those circles think to themselves like I did. They think, why doesn't Nehemiah accept Jesus as the Messiah? Hang on a second. Why do I accept Jesus as the Messiah? And and maybe they will go and look up, for example, Rabbi Tovia Singer, whose gig it is to explain to you in detail why we don't. Oh. And it's not Nehemiah's gig. He doesn't want it to be his gig. And so it doesn't surprise me when he has videos of people saying, hey, you know what, you encouraged me in faith in Yeshua. Oh. A video like that I think is powerful because it concretes his standing in those circles so much more. People lap that stuff up and they go, oh, yeah, there's hope for him yet. I mean, you know, he hasn't seen the light yet, but he will if we keep praying for him. And then people, you know, Christians love to think in that direction and hope and pray in that direction that Nehemiah will one day turn to that faith. He won't. I mean, he won't. There's no way he will. But while he remains within those circles, he has the ability to very subtly drop crumbs of information and hints in a direction that I have no doubt people like myself will pick up and go, I'm going to go and check this out. I mean, just let's sit down in front of the computer, type in a few things, and let's do some investigation. And lo and behold, they may come to the same conclusion that I did. And I think that's a powerful thing.
Mm. And well, there are lessons to be learned about how to communicate with people. I think that's the moral of the story.
Yeah. And it is. And look, honestly, and like I said, I can't communicate. I wouldn't be able to. I don't have it in me. What he is able to do, it's not possible for me. And so some people can do that and some people can't. Some people are spies and some people aren't. Some people are actors and some people aren't. You know what I mean? And, I know a lot of people that have refined their faith to the Tanakh or that are Jewish, they may look at that video and look at it with absolute disdain and go, oh my goodness, how can he put something like this out? And isn't he ashamed? It just makes me sick to watch it. I mean, but, remember, there's a lot of people that wonder why. I mean, Nehemiah even says in the program, I think he says, you know, I mean, this personal revelation that you've had, Dr. Mark, is not one that I've had. So he openly admits, you know, he's not a Christian. He's not compelled to investigate it. People have to wonder why. They have to go, well, why? What do you know? What do you know that we don't know? What aren't you telling us? That should be the question that every Gordonite should ask themselves. What aren't you telling us? What is it that you're not telling us? I mean, you stick to certain safe topics And we love you for that, and you really know your stuff. But what aren't you telling us? That would be what I would encourage people to investigate. And,
you know, reach out and ask. Because he's very good at answering questions, and he loves to have a nice full inbox. So, you know, if you're curious, if you're a Christian and you're curious about why he doesn't, go ahead and ask him.
No, well, but no. And if, you can, but he won't tell you. Now, listen, so Nehemiah is not a counter missionary. If you want to know the answers to certain questions in regards to apologetics between the polemic between Judaism and Christianity, it is not his forte. He doesn't want it to be, although he does admit, even on this video, I do believe, that his mentor, his Karaite mentor, was a very dedicated counter-missionary. His name was Mordechai Alfandari, an amazing man. I mean, Nehemiah was very blessed to be able to be mentored by such an individual, a historic individual that I think we don't have enough information on the web about. There was once a website called Light of Israel, I do think it was called.
Yeah, is that still going? Because, I mean, two or 3 years ago that was up and it started to vanish.
Yeah, it disappeared off the net. And I don't know who was looking after it. I do know that another student of Mordechai Alfandari is Mir Rakavi. Now, Mir Rakavi is the chancellor of the Karaite Jewish University. And it's just started up and running again. By the way, folks, if you're interested in doing a course on Karaite Judaism, they are taking names and they're making that available in the coming months, I do believe. What's the website? Is it kju.com?
I think it might be a .org. I'm not sure.
Yeah, do a search. Do a search and you'll find that if you're interested. But Mir Rakavi was also, and I had the great pleasure of meeting Mir Rakavi in Be'er Sheva last year. Lovely guy, really, really, really nice guy. Also a student of Mordechai Alfandari. He does have all of Mordechai's works because Mordechai wrote all of these tracts, counter-missionary tracts. A great body of work and one that I think it would be an injustice to the world if it just sort of disappeared off the face of the map. It'd be great to have it back up on the web and, you know, maybe sometime soon it will. And but, yeah, he too was a student of Mordechai Alfandari. And, you know, when we go on tour, you know, when we go to the Karaites synagogue in Jerusalem, I always mention Mordechai Alfandari, because he was a very big part of getting that synagogue back up and running and restored after the war, you know, drumming up support and funds from the Karaite communities in Israel and bringing it to what we see today. He circulated photos of the damage that had been done during the war, and he said, you know, we've got to get this up. And it's one of the oldest, if not the oldest, a synagogue in Jerusalem that's still functioning.
I think it is the oldest.
So he really is.
It was a wall, really. It's a wall of rubble before it was put together.
And it's a medieval synagogue. He was instrumental in really kickstarting that. And this is way before, you know, GoFundMe or anything like that. I mean, you really had to do your work. And a very dedicated counter-missionary. Nehemiah was very blessed to be his a student, as was Mir Rakavi. And together, Mir and Nehemiah and also Sean Lisha wrote a book, As It Is Written. And that's a book that I highly recommend.
It's an excellent book, yeah.
It's an excellent book. I've got a copy here, As It Is Written. So if you really want a good book, if you haven't got that already, and you want to know a little bit more about Karaite Judaism, definitely get that book. But yeah, I'm just saying, don't write to Nehemiah and ask him counter-missionary questions. He wants to avoid that genre, and it's not his gig. But as he mentions himself, it is Rabbi Tovia Singer's gig. And as Nehemiah mentions, he says, you know, I think that Rabbi Tovia Singer does an excellent job of presenting the Jewish perspective. And so if you are a Gordonite, then maybe you should check out why Nehemiah says that. But don't ask Nehemiah, because he doesn't want to get into that stuff.
You won't tell him. Now, someone who did have a huge impact on people's faith throughout the world, Billy Graham.
Ah, gone.
Let's hop over to Billy. Billy is now gone. Billy
he is
gone.
Gone. Now, I'm in two minds.
I don't know what to say about that.
Well, I'm in two minds about it. Oh. My grandparents and my parents were influenced by Billy Graham. I grew up in the Christian tradition, and as I mentioned earlier, Pentecostal Christianity, I didn't appreciate it. Now, having said that, I will say, and look, I've talked to Ross about this. Ross also grew up in a Christian tradition for which he is thankful. And I said to him, "Why are you thankful?" And he said, "Well, you know, I may not hold to the New Testament anymore, but you know, during those years, it did instill in me a great appreciation for the Bible that did include what, you know, I referred to back then as the Old Testament." Now, that's true with me as well. You know, I went to a Christian school where I think I set a record for getting the cane, by the way. Didn't like it. Hated it. But we did have a Bible topic, and I did have a great respect for the Bible, and I did do, you know, the Bible courses and all that sort of stuff, and gained, you know, maybe a little bit more information than the majority of you know, your garden variety Christians. And maybe I can, and so I'm in two minds. You know, there are things about, you know, that perhaps I should be thankful for. But yeah, the mixed feelings about the whole Billy Graham thing. I mean, really, I have no doubt in real life he was probably a really nice guy. I mean, reports, well, it's documented that he expressed some anti-Semitic sentiment on some conversations with President Nixon back in the day. But as a whole, I'll tell you another thing about Billy Graham, though, is that when the Southern Baptists decided, hey, let's target Jews, let's convert Jews, you know, and I think out of the Southern Baptist movement came Jews for Jesus. It's just a sort of a denomination or a mask over the Southern Baptists, if I remember correctly. Billy Graham said, "No, I'm not doing that. No, I won't do that. No, not doing that." So, you know, good for him. But in the Christian world, yeah, it's a great passing. You know, it's a great loss.
Yeah, it's difficult. I mean, you should never really be happy that somebody died. But then, if you should celebrate somebody who seemed to be kind of two-faced too. That's my opinion. I mean, coming from England, Billy Graham didn't really have that much of a reach over there. Everyone knew who he was. It was this big American evangelist. But we're a bit more subdued in the UK, a bit more tea and crumpets and a bit less jumping up and down and clapping hands. When I tell people that I used to go to a Baptist church, they expect it to be what an American would see as a Baptist church, with clapping and singing and, but it's not. It's very, you know, the difference between a Baptist church and an Anglican church really is that you don't really get kind of the matins and the back and forth, and it's generally in a building that's not a church-shaped building. There's not much in it. You know, except there's a full submersion baptism.
Yeah.
It's not. It's just not the same. So Billy Graham and that style of TV evangelism, of actually, like, you know, full-scale stadium evangelism, it just didn't happen. So he wasn't really that big of a name.
Okay. I'll tell you something else about Billy Graham is that he wasn't yes, he was an extremely charismatic individual, very, very confident and a very good public speaker. And if he wanted to, he could have raked in the dollars, you know, at the gigs and on his radio programs and all that sort of stuff. But he really didn't. That wasn't a big focus of Billy Graham's crusades for boy, yeah, for want of a better. I mean, how to you know really turn Jews off? Let's call it the crusades. And many other contemporaries of Billy Graham really did milk people for the bucks. You know, and people would pay them, but Billy Graham wasn't so much one of those. But at the same time, you know, I mean, you know, now we clearly regard his religion as idolatry. It's difficult to celebrate a man that whose entire life was about misleading people. You know, I'm not one to celebrate Billy Graham, and I'm not really one to miss him either. So, but I understand it is a great loss in the Christian world.
It's an interesting thing because on the one hand, he did kind of raise Israel's right to be Israel and support Israel as a place, and really kind of garnered Christian thought towards Israel as somewhere they should want to visit and support. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, actually, I saw Rabbi Michael Scoback over at Jews for Jesus. He has this great video on evangelism and why Christians supporting Israel is a good thing and a bad thing. Like, it's a two-sided coin. You can't have one without the other. Mm. You have to ask, why did he? Is he supporting Israel because the Jews deserve to have their own state? Is he supporting Israel because it's given to the Jews biblically? Or is he supporting Israel because he wants to be a part of that time when the Christians are in Israel and Jesus comes and they become the new Israel? Is that why he's doing it?
Yeah.
You have to ask whether, you know, should you support him because of that? Because, you know, it's odd. It's difficult. But if you take that away, then you've got, you know, a huge swathe of the Christian American audience and now not supporting Israel. You know, so it's difficult.
I'll tell you, a Christian preacher who did support Israel and literally, you know, held hands with Jews, and this is something that just came out today, and this is in the Times of Israel, previously unheard Martin Luther King synagogue speech broadcast in U.S. schools. Hailed as historic gem, 1961 Massachusetts talk by civil rights leader in the Massachusetts synagogue in 1961. And as it begins, and I started listening to it today, it says the reel-to-reel recordings of the speech at Temple Emmanuel in Worcester, about an hour from Boston, were rediscovered in 2013 by Laura Kleinweiner, the granddaughter of Rabbi Yosef Klein, who had invited King to speak there. The speech uses phrases and themes from King's I Have a Dream address delivered 2 years later. Now, I do have a great respect for Martin Luther King, and I started listening to these this particular speech. And at the beginning, the person who introduces Martin Luther King's, you know, makes note. He says, look, we are absolutely capacity. I don't think we've ever seen the synagogue this packed before. And I love the way that Martin Luther King talks. So, so far, I'm only like 20 minutes into it, and it is riveting. So I certainly have more, I will admit, I have more time and interest and respect and appreciation for Reverend Martin Luther King than I do for Billy Graham. But, you know, there you go.
Let us know your thoughts in the comments section underneath. You don't have to do anything, really. If you're over at Truth to You, go down there, hit the comment section. I think it'll just ask for an email or something if you haven't signed up already for that.
Newsletter. If you want to get the Truth to You newsletter, get onto truth2you.org, truth2u.org. There's a little widget on the right-hand side. You can put your email address in and you will get a weekly newsletter. It'll have programs like this, but also I've just started reloading the 365 series. For those who don't know, Rabbi Scoback and myself did the 365 messianic prophecies that, you know, Christians claim that Jesus fulfilled. So you'll find those in the newsletter.
We would like to know what you want. So I've written kind of a cursory list of some other stuff. So some weeks we might cover things which aren't which go deviate from the theme a little bit. If you've got questions or if you find interesting stories or websites you want us to take a look at and talk about, then please let us know. And if you enjoy the videos, please let us know. Don't forget to share them with your friends. You can find us both on Facebook, and you can send us Facebook. You can send us, it is these days, this amount of ads is crazy. You can send us friend requests on there. We are not shy. So, John is a little bit more shy than I am.
Yes.
But send us friend requests on there and then get involved in the conversation.
Yeah, good one. All right, we're done. All right, thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. And until then, have a great one.
Bye-bye.